Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And it might not sound quite like me. For some reason, my voice is a little scratchy today. So maybe I can get some help. I can call on goddesses to help me. And I think in order to do that, actually I have two goddesses on the line. And thankfully for my voice. And one of the goddesses actually has written a book on goddesses. And that's Julie Lohr. And Julie, Goddesses for Every Day is your book. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. It's a delight to be with you this morning.
I'm glad you're here. And the other goddess is the chief goddess in my life, my wife, who knows a lot about goddesses, much more than I do, and I'm here to learn a lot more, and that's Deborah Roth. Welcome, Deborah.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here with both of you. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Deborah. It's wonderful to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
And actually, Deborah has a book she just launched. Deborah, tell us about it.
It's called Circle of One, The Art of Becoming a Self-Centered Woman. And it really speaks to why Julie's book made such an impact on me when I read it, because I also, like you, Julie, and I can't wait to hear more about your journey, it very much brings in the honoring of the divine feminine as we move through life's big changes and also through everyday living. And honoring, just as you talk about in your book, too, the faces of the divine feminine. And so I am excited to hear about how you got to your goddesses for every day.
It's quite a story. My whole life, actually, I've been sort of a bit of a feminist, I guess. Didn't even know what that word was a long time ago. Grew up in the 60s at a time of a lot of social change and went on to be in corporate America and sort of do that whole thing and, in a sense, be part of the group that were breaking some ceilings, glass or otherwise, or trying to. But the story of this book sort of came together about 5 years ago when someone hired me to ghostwrite a novel that took place about 2,000 years ago. And in my research, not only did I remember a lot of the issues from my childhood and young womanhood, but I came upon a lot of information that I only really knew about peripherally. And I kept asking the question, why don't we know this? Why isn't this taught in school? Why don't we have any rites of passage? I mean, that's true for young boys or young girls. And I just sort of caught fire with this sense of urgency to do something that I felt would speak to a larger audience, primarily of women, but men too, of this tremendous lineage that we have. So that's sort of it in a nutshell. I'd love to hear about your journey too.
Well, but we're here really to get yours. I will tell you though, I'm smiling because the way that I experienced that similar shift that you're talking about, when I was introduced to this notion, which was really new to me too, and for me it was, back in about 92, and I was given a book, The Chalice and the Blade, and this same person told me about the goddess, and it just opened my heart. And like you, it was this feeling of, oh, that's what's been missing.
Right.
Well, let me say that I think this is very important for women to be empowered in ways that haven't been available to them for centuries or millennia.
And definitely millennium, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how we've lived in such a patriarchal society that the idea of a goddess is actually, in many people's minds, is heresy. How can there be a goddess when there's really just a god? And a goddess is just a fantasy.
That's right. Worse than a fantasy, it's heresy and forbidden. It's interesting that one of the goddesses or ideas of divine feminine that's in my book. It's in December. I can't now remember which date earlier in December. The name is Sapientia. It's Latin. It's the Latin version of wisdom, which in interestingly enough, in the patriarchal religions, is always seen as as feminine. But she sort of became a hidden goddess when it was forbidden to be speaking about the sacred feminine in the Middle Ages. The great question for me, to which I don't really have an answer, is how this happened and why it happened. And it began about 4,000 years ago, at least outwardly that we can understand. But why is it that we've now swung so far to this idea of patriarchy or one male god, and the damage that I think has been done to the psyche of humanity as a result?
Well, maybe that many of us have too high expectations for where we've been. Hopefully we have high expectations for where we're going. And I think bringing the divine feminine back into power is the only way we're going to get there.
Well, I would have to agree with you. It seems that we've become very, very unbalanced, almost schizophrenic in the West. It's less true still in indigenous cultures around the world who seem to have managed to hold on to the ideas. But somehow with this idea, with this, what we've done in terms of the advancement of science in some ways, or this extreme movement toward the rational side of our nature, not that we shouldn't have it, it's important, but it's as if these other ways of knowing have been lost or diminished or devalued in some way. And I feel, sounds like you do too, that they really need to be reclaimed. We need to understand this other way of being.
Well, when you talk about these other ways of knowing and other ways of being, there's some substance there that a lot of people have no idea about. It's not a familiar topic, and we, you know, in on the male side, we have a god. He's the man, but we don't have the woman. We have goddesses. Not, and we might say the goddess, but what is the goddess versus goddesses? How can we call that there is a goddess, as people call there is a god?
Well, and I think Julie speaks to that, too, so beautifully. I mean, you've written several books before this one, too, Julie, that talk about the power of archetypes. And even just the very short little video on your website talks about this notion of the mother goddess. And you also talk about in the book in earlier times, you know, really up until recently, it's always been the triple goddess, maiden, mother, and crone. Now I like to think that there's, and there are many other women who have, you know, who are writing about goddesses who bring in a fourth face of the divine feminine, which falls between the mothering years and the wise woman crone years, which is the queen or the matriarch or the Amazon, so many different names. But, you know, I think what you're speaking to, Peter, is this, is there a goddess? And yet, as you said, Julie, that's exactly what they were honoring, you know, thousands of years ago when you talk about Venus Willendorf. And, you know, she was not just a sex symbol. She was the preeminent image of the divine.
But is that an image of the divine as feminine versus the male god who a lot of people give a beingness, dominance? You know, it's a dominant factor, and it's a ruling factor, whereas this is a different essence of power.
You've both triggered so many thoughts in my mind, I could probably go up in six directions at this point. So many things are firing in my brain. But, you know, it's interesting. Biblical archaeologists, I should say biblical scholars, thought for a while that the idea of one God emerged rather suddenly with the Hebrews and what we call the Old Testament. But increasingly now biblical archaeologists who are actually in the field doing research with things are finding that that really isn't true. And this idea of an overarching divine principle in which we all live and move and have our being, to borrow a phrase, is a rather universal concept. So then how, I think what happens is then, how do we as humans begin to make that enormous universe personal? So I think the way we do that often is through anthropomorphizing it, turning it into something that resembles us in a way we can relate to. And for many thousands of years, that was a great mother who had different aspects. And as Deborah said, and I'm fascinated, I could probably talk for a long time and love to have more of a conversation about that, the three, the maiden, mother, and crone, were essentially the waxing crescent moon, the full moon, and the waning crescent moon. But that division of four that you mentioned also has to do with the four seasons of the year. And how do we look at that? There are just as many gods as there are goddesses around the world. And it seems as though we've tried to bring things down to a level that we can understand or to a principle we can admire. So we have heroes and heroines and gods and goddesses. How does a single human person aspire to something greater through identifying with an archetypal principle?
Well, I've always taught that God has to be a man. And the reason I've taught that is that when the enemy is at the gate and everybody is screaming for help, and they scream to the goddess, and the goddess says, let's talk about this. Let's try to love each other. Let's put our arms around each other. And you say, no, no, no. I don't want, we can't do that. The enemy's at the gate. I want somebody who will smite the enemy, kill him off.
Well, Peter, I would submit to you that there's nothing more fearsome in nature than a mother defending its young.
Well, that's true.
And likewise, there are many goddesses who were warriors, and some of the most ancient were the ones who were the huntresses. In lions, it's the females who do all the hunting and protecting of the tribe. The male lions are basically, pardon my expression, they're kind of useless. They wander around. So, you know, I think even when you get into nature and take a look, we all have each of those qualities within us. Females have the capacity for fierceness, and males have the capacity for gentleness. We seem to have polarized some of the qualities rather than integrating them. I had a boss in corporate America who used to say, he was quoting someone, and I don't know who originally said it, but he said, if your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And that's what
that's
we've
so
done.
That's so perfect.
We've sort of specialized to the point where we can't access and reach all of the qualities and characteristics that every one of us has.
But that's probably the answer for why we're at this stage in the world.
Well, and also I think, too, an answer, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit very specifically about the book, Julie, because what you do is make all these different faces and aspects of the goddess, the mother goddess, or all the, you know, the three or four major phases, you make it so accessible. And, I mean, the name of the book is Goddesses for Every Day. And every day you offer, you know, a different goddess, a different theme, just a lovely short contemplation. And then throughout the book, and I'm such a lover of symbols, too, you know, if you've broken it down astrologically by each sign and then assigned each sign, which I thought was so fascinating and wonderful, a goddess symbol. So can you speak to how all that really can really help just a regular person who doesn't know, you know, doesn't know goddess language? How do you see this book with this wonderful daily connection to her with a capital H affecting people who are, this is a new thing for?
I love how you asked the question, Deborah. It was quite a process for me, because once I got into the research and I discovered that there are thousands of gods and goddesses in cultures around the world, and I thought, how in the world will I express this in a way that is accessible to someone and has some sort of a meaning? And I grappled with it in the beginning. In the beginning, I wanted to use numbers that I thought were more feminine, and I thought I really would like to make this more of a lunar relationship. Ultimately, I just embraced the fact that the zodiac is a frame that most people are actually familiar with, even if they don't know much about it, they know what it is, and it represents the circle of the year and the seasons. And so then the next thing was I perceived a connection between spring and the maiden goddesses, or the beginning of life, the phases of innocence, but also, because it was aligned with the zodiac, with the goddesses of war or hunting, or the ones who were the pioneers and the pathfinders. Summer seemed to align more with the lunar goddesses, the mother goddesses, and then, of course, the dark time of the year to me spoke of the elder crone, whose domain was fate in many ways. And it's such an interesting thing to watch. For me, it was to watch the difference. So then, too, how to bring it to a reasonable level. Judith Orloff has an expression that the shower is the psychic phone booth. I love that one, and it's true for me. So I discovered, as others have, and Deborah, as I'm sure you have too, in your research, that around the world there are these symbols that are always associated with the feminine. Serpents for wisdom, the spider, the spinning wheel, the tree of life. And one morning in the shower, literally, I had the idea, I wonder if I could align those with the signs of the zodiac. So I rushed out of the shower, went to the computer, and it seemed in an instant to be a perfect fit. So that came as a wonderful piece of guidance and synchronicity. So that was the origin of what I've called the goddess signs, using feminine symbols to represent the signs of the zodiac, and then aligning the goddesses within those based on what I perceive to be their most dominant quality and how that might relate or correspond with the traditional signs of the zodiac. And it seems to work.
Well, so I'm listening, and I'm thinking, all right, how is the reader just going to use this and enhance their days?
Well, I have to jump in here because I'm telling you already, I have a daily practice, a journaling book that's a daily calendar journaling book that is also seasonal, called the Essene Book of Days. And just going through yours, Julie, this reader right here, this listener right here, will be adding that because it brings a very distinctly divinely feminine aspect to my, which I do a lot of goddessy stuff every day anyway, but this I love because of the 365 themes, and you can just pick up the book on any given day and read the goddess and educate yourself about these 366 different goddesses, which is amazing that you have such a all over the world. I mean, some Peter can tell you, I have goddess books all over our apartment, and a lot of them I have never heard of before, and they're literally from every culture. But you can also just pick up the book, and you brilliantly put in the back just an index of keywords. So if someone wants to focus on mastery today, they'll flip open and look in mastery and see that they can, I'm doing it right now, that they can go to March 30th and learn about, you know, in addition to whatever goddess might be happening that day anyway, if they feel like they need a little extra boost of mastery that day, they will find out about Olwen, who's a Welsh goddess.
Oh, I thank you. It's wonderful to hear your feedback, Deborah. It's very very confirming, because as you know, writing is a very solitary process, and sometimes you go through this and think, is this going to make any sense to anybody but me?
The book is really accessible. That was the main point I wanted to say. But you should answer Peter's question too.
Well, in many ways you did, but I think there are so many different goddesses that we actually represent us.
Yes. And, you know, I could do one for gods, too, although I think that my own feeling is that the male principle has been rather overbalanced. But, you know, I thought about doing it with a way that might make the gods more heart-centered, or figuring out a way to do it to combine them. But to answer your question, I think that Deborah did in many ways. But my idea was, too, that the contemplation part of it, this sort of statement or question at the end, might be like a call to action, or a way that someone could integrate what was happening in their life at that moment. So somehow by thinking about that particular goddess, or in some ways a person too can just let the book ask a question or let the book fall open in what looks like a random way and get an idea or a suggestion for meditation. But the feedback I'm getting from people, from women, is that they are using it in a sense, as Deborah described, like either a part of their morning meditation or something at noon or an evening reflection to journal back on the day. How it went is just one piece of a practice that moves us more inward, moves us more into our heart, and for me helps us learn to move again more in resonance with the cycles of the year, of the day, and of the month, of how we move in these continual cycles and shift constantly from light to dark and back again in the day, the month, and the year. And that in our world that we have now of technology and artificial light and 24/7 lifestyle, few people even look at the sky or the stars, and I think, again, that's sort of a dangerous thing to do, to think that we're living this linear way that takes us from one point to another rather than continually moving in cycles.
Oh, that's so much a piece of what Circle of One, my book, is about. We definitely have to talk, Julie.
I can't wait.
I also wanted to share, just so people have a sense, today is December 14th, and it's so wonderful that here we are all having a lovely conversation, and the theme for the day is eloquence. And it's from the Japanese goddess that you connected with today is Bensai Pen. And the contemplation, and Peter, you're a little croaky today, so it may have to be Julie and I that carry this contemplation, but it can be something for you to work on to get your voice fully back. The contemplation today, just to give people an example, my speech flows like an elegant lyric and is pleasing to the heart as well as the ear. So the contemplations are just so lovely and meditative, as you said. It's a call to action, but it's also a call to inner action, not, you know, bringing us out, but really it's such a, you know, here we are talking about the balance between the masculine and the feminine, and it really is a balance between, you know, our inner world and the deep intuitive, creative, non-rational feminine yin world and the out there active, you know, getting stuff done yang world.
Yes, because as we said, we all have both, whether we're in a male body or a female body. I believe we're all meant to have our full palette, our full complement of different qualities. And as I was alluding to my boss earlier, to know what's appropriate for a given situation or a given time. Because, again, the Bible's thing of I can't remember now where it is, but time to sow, a time to reap, a time to mm-hmm. heal, a time, all that whole piece is the same thing. And without understanding that everything waxes and wanes and that everything has its time and purpose, then we're sort of going full throttle in one direction and not even knowing where we're going sometimes.
Well, sorry, my voice isn't able to be that clear. But I think that we are living in such a limited age of being maybe too smart and not wise enough, and in every way, and to know all these different traits of goddesses is to actually learn about the possibilities for wisdom that we all have, men and women, and can grow from, and are missing.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Peter. I think it's so true, and I think that it's a good way to say it. We have a lot of knowledge. We have a lot of technology, but in many ways we've lost that sense of wisdom. And just looking at sort of what's going on, not only in the world, but certainly being played out in a big way in our own country with the extreme polarization that we're seeing of of views and people drawing these lines in the sand. And I think, and you know, you mentioned a little while ago the idea that God had to be a man because he was going to go protect the gates of heaven or whatever. And it's so interesting, in indigenous cultures, they might have had warriors, they might have had chieftains, but these cultures almost always had a council of what we might call crones or female elders, because they were the ones who might know the other mothers and grandmothers from the neighboring tribe that they were considering going to war with. They might know the children of this other clan or place, and they were always consulted to get another view that wasn't just filled with an idea of conquering or an idea of we should go take what's theirs because we need it. And those qualities are just sadly missing in our culture.
The wisdom and Native Americans, their divine feminine was very strong.
Still is.
Yes.
Really, still is. And it's true in Africa. It's true in places like Hawaii. It's true in New Zealand, places that... where, as I said, these indigenous cultures that have not become so extremely directed after science and technology.
Sorry, barking dog.
The dog goddess is having her say today, too.
That's right. And the last thing I wanted to say, I'm sorry about that, I hope you can hear me, is that I also feel like with all the different qualities that you put forth throughout all these 366 goddesses, Julie, that it gives us all permission as humans, men and women, to be angry, to be sad, to feel like we need to have a quiet day, to feel like we want to be out there. I mean, there's so many different qualities and so many different ways to be that are represented by all these goddesses in your book. And it gives us permission as humans to be all of that whole range, that whole, you know, range of what we might otherwise define as strictly masculine or strictly feminine traits or qualities.
I think that's a really good point too. That we're in the process of becoming. None of us, I think, are perfect yet, and we have a lot of opportunity and a lot of work to do. And I think that understanding that we're all in process, we're all sort of gods and goddesses in training or something, and that we are going to have those days, and we are going to have things that make us angry, sometimes rightly so, filled with a righteous indignation. But then there are times for compassion and non-judgment, and it's all part of the rich tapestry that life is.
So this is an opportunity, this book, to create much more scope in our lives and possibility for being more whole.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's really what it is, isn't it? That true meaning of the word holistic, that true meaning of the word whole, and kind of tying that back to what I was saying about this large overarching presence. I think that's one of the things that has happened in the Abrahamic religions as well. God became this separate being, and the creation was apart from God, and therefore humanity was apart from God. And that, I think, again, was a big mistake that we made. But in point of truth, I believe nothing is separate. We're all part of this greater reality, and therefore we should be more open to how we engage each other.
And on that, it sounds like the show is starting to close. And I want to thank Julie for being on the show. Your book, Goddesses for Every Day, is such a treasure.
Thank you so much.
And how can people reach you?
They can reach me through my website, julielore.com, L-O-A-R. My email is julielore@centurytell.net, but you can reach that through the website, and I love to hear from people.
Thank you so much, Julie. And Deborah Roth, thank you for being a guest host on Energy Stew.
I loved hearing from Deborah, so hopefully we can connect too. Thank you so much, Peter.
Sure, thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host, not in full voice, but I will be again soon. Thank you so much for listening to Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. Thank you so much for listening.